Welcome to the Relatable Finance Podcast. Here are your hosts, Joseph Carl and Shane Phillips.
So welcome to this episode of Relatable Finance. Today, we're going to discuss the ways in which the government influences the economy. Now, in this very polarized political world, we're not trying to take any sides here. We're just trying to go into the ways in which the government impacts the economy. Also, understanding how the government influences the economy can help you make better financial decisions and view current events in the proper context. Remember, it is underlying strength and weakness of the economy that is the biggest driver of investable asset class returns, so understanding these relationships can be helpful.
Yeah, and I definitely want to reiterate that this is not political. We're not trying to take any sides here. But as you'll soon find out, the government is huge, a lot bigger than I would have thought before doing research for this episode. When we think about different companies out there that we think have a big influence, like Amazon and Apple, and they are big companies, but compared to the government, you know, the government would be as if it was just a huge, huge, huge corporation. So definitely something that's worth considering.
So let's first look at the components of our gross domestic product, or GDP, which is the most common way to measure our economic growth. U.S. GDP is around $21 trillion, and of that, around 17% is government spending, or $3.6 trillion. If we take into consideration a broader measure that includes the spending of state and local government, that percentage jumps to around 38%. So if we were to simplify this and boil the entire U.S. economy down to $10, around $4 would be either directly or indirectly associated with the government.
Yeah, and again, just for comparison purposes, to show how big the government truly is, let's go back to Amazon and Apple. So expected revenues for 2019 for Apple were about $90 billion. And if we compare that to GDPs of entire countries, that'd be similar to Ethiopia or the Dominican Republic. So very, very big countries. When we look at the revenues compared to the U.S. GDP, it's tiny. 0.4%. So huge company, we all know Apple, but still in comparison to the U.S. economy, very small. Very similar thing with Amazon. So Amazon has larger revenues, about $230 billion, which is compared to Greece or New Zealand, so some bigger countries. But once again, compare that to the U.S. GDP and we're only talking about 1.1%.
Yeah, so some great numbers there, Shane. So with the government being that large, where does all the spending go? Well, a good chunk of that is defense and also entitlement programs such as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. The government also employs a lot of people. The federal government employs around 2 million people, and when we take into consideration state and local government, that jumps to around 22 million. Altogether, government jobs, whether it be federal or state and local, account for around 1 in 5 jobs.
Yeah, so not to make myself sound dumb or anything, but once again, this was something that really jumped out at me. 1 in 5 jobs seemed huge for government workers. I feel like I don't know anybody that works for the government, but when we looked at the breakdown, it started to make more and more sense. So anybody that works for the U.S. military is a government employee. All the TSA agents that you see at the airport, all government employees. And then lastly, teachers. I feel like I know a ton of teachers, and all the teachers that work for public schools are all government employees. So when you really look into it a little bit further, break it down, there may be some areas of the government that you don't realize are government employees or don't think of them as government employees, but at the end of the day they are, and the government employs lots and lots of people.
Yeah, so with the government spending that much, where does all the money come from? It really boils down to two sources. First, obviously the taxes we pay. In 2019, the government is projected to collect around $3.4 trillion in revenue, while they are projected to spend around $4.5 trillion, which brings up another point, the shortfall between how much the government spends versus how much it takes in. Whatever the difference must be made up in the form of debt. Currently, the U.S. government has around $21 trillion, which sounds absolutely crazy. A lot of that debt has accumulated over the years, and the last time the U.S. ran a government budget surplus, which is when the amount they take in is greater than what they spend, was around 2001.
Yeah, so if we think about the government, we may think they're good at some things, bad at the others. One thing that they're definitely very, very good at is spending more than they make. So Joe said the last time they had a surplus was 2001. Out of the last 50 years, they've only had a surplus in 5 of those years. So 45 out of the 50 years, they've ran a deficit. So if we think about this when you would look at a corporation, or if you think about your personal life, if you're spending more than you're making, that could create a pretty big problem. Personally speaking, we talk about personal budgets a lot for this reason alone, because we can't be spending more than we make. But as Joe said, debt and the government's access to debt is something that they have that many people don't. Definitely something that doesn't make them like a personal finance person or a corporation, is they have access to other means.
Yeah, I think that this is kind of an important point to make, and something to discuss a little bit further here briefly, because you can't really compare U.S. government debt relative to that of a family, let's say, or even a corporation. And that is because the government has advantages that really no person or corporation or even other governments in the world have. And that's because of a couple reasons. First, the U.S., when it issues debt, it does so in the form of treasury bills or treasury bonds. These are considered the safest investment in the world. They are backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which is the world's largest economy. With that, the government can borrow at a really attractive rate. For example, the most recent 10-year treasury auction was issued at a rate of 2%. So if the government borrows at 2% and we have economic growth greater than 2%, then it really made sense for us to borrow. And that kind of explains why it can make a little bit of sense for the government to always have a little bit debt. Next, a lot of the debt that the government issues is at a fixed rate, while the income or the revenue that the government takes in is going to naturally grow as the economy grows and inflation happens. So over time, that debt burden can be eroded by economic growth, even if the tax rates stay the same. So given these benefits, it really makes sense for the U.S. government to always carry at least some debt because of the advantages that it has. Now, we just went into government spending, taxes, and government debt, which are all factors that the government can use, but they aren't necessarily constant. What does this mean? Said another way, the government changes these variables depending upon economic conditions. For example, we just passed the recent tax cuts, which were aimed at putting more money in family and corporations' pockets. The idea here is that by having more in their pockets, families and businesses will go out and spend more, which will help boost economic growth. More consumer spending and business investment is extremely important, given that together they account for around 80% of our economy.
Yeah, so if we think about these tax cuts, it brings in less tax revenue, or at least from strictly the tax side of it, not getting into where they're going to go spend that money in those taxes. But with less revenue coming in, obviously that is where that debt has to fill the void. So we've been talking about government debt. You know, when we look back to 2009, the government had $9 trillion in debt, which is a huge, huge number. We're talking about trillions with a T. If we fast forward to today, the government has $21 trillion in debt, and that's an increase of 133%. So just a huge, huge increase. But a lot of the reason why it's jumped so much is because if we go back to 2009, we're coming out of the financial crisis, and the government felt they needed to be spending more and thus taking on more debt to help the spur of the economy that was quite weak at the time.
So all of the above variables, government spending, taxes, government debt, etc., all of these would fall under what would be considered fiscal policy. Another tool that the government has is monetary policy, which is conducted through the central bank, and in the United States here it's referred to as or known as the Federal Reserve. Monetary policy is primarily implemented with the Fed moving short-term interest rates. And a good way to think of this is like a gas pedal and a brake on a car. If the Fed wants to speed up the economy, they lower interest rate, which is kind of like pushing the gas pedal. If they want to slow down the economy, they raise interest rate, which is like pushing the brake.
Yeah, and that is one of my all-time favorite Joe Carl analogies. I've used it many, many times myself, and I think it really is a good way to visualize what the Fed ultimately can and does do, especially with the Fed getting so much publicity recently. So if we go back to the financial crisis again, similar to them increasing spending and increasing the debt at the same time, monetary policy was also used to help spur the economy. And this happened in the U.S. with the Fed, but globally as well. So it was a time where interest rates were pushed very, very low. And if you would have looked at your checking account a few years ago to see what you were getting in interest, it was next to nothing. It's because they push rates so low. And we're still in a very low interest rate environment. So if we go across the ocean over to Germany and Switzerland, they actually still have negative interest rates. So if you think about it, if the government borrows $1,000 from you at a negative interest rate, when they pay you back, they're going to pay you less than $1,000 back. So needless to say, this doesn't make any sense, but really confirms that we're in a very, very strange interest rate environment. But a lot of that had to do with global monetary policy and helping us getting us out of that financial crisis.
Yeah, and a couple of points I think worth making there is that, you know, if they're charging negative interest rates, they're not doing that here in the United States, but they are in other places, particularly in Europe. But if they're charging, you know, negative interest rates, what they're essentially trying to do is discourage you from saving and going out and spending. And that's going to boost economic growth. So that's the thought process behind it. Next, I think it's also important to note that a lot of the discussions that we may have had earlier with fiscal policy, whether it be taxes or government spending or government debt, those are all subject to approval through, you know, various levels in Congress here in the United States before we can really move forward on those things. Monetary policy, however, is established to be independent of the government, and it was established that way a long time ago because many of the leaders realized that, you know, some of the best things that needed to be done for our country were being held up because of politics, and we can't necessarily have that. So monetary policy is done independently of our government. But the two things that we just discussed, the broader things, was fiscal policy and monetary policy. And these are the two primary avenues in which the government has to stimulate the economy. But it doesn't stop there. There are many other ways the government can use to try and influence the economy.
Yeah, so a lot of these are kind of tax-oriented, whether we realize it or not, either through credits or deductions. But some of the examples would be that you get a tax credit for buying a hybrid vehicle. You get a tax credit for having dependent children. You get a deduction for starting a business. And the list goes on and on. And a lot of these kind of make perfect sense. You know, hybrid vehicles, cleaner air, not getting too far into that. But some of these really do make sense. There's other ones such as depending on how long you live in your home before you sell it, there may be some tax benefits as well. But it's the government's way of really trying to push you into making certain decisions. We've talked about consumer spending, but it goes to show that the government really has their hands in a lot of different things.
Yeah, and it even goes beyond that. Take into consideration trade policies, which are a hot topic right now as the U.S. tries to negotiate trade with China. There's also protecting private property rights. Those aren't necessarily, those don't exist in other countries. Our immigration policies, or having patents and protecting them, which encourage individuals or companies to go out there and try and innovate, which help our economy. All of these are little things the government has to try and influence and promote economic growth. But at the end of the day, the government wants to try and stay out of the way of the economy and let capitalism work. But certain protections and restrictions are needed to ensure that things are moving in the right direction and incentivize behavior. We could argue that more or less should be done, or they should be done this way or that way, but at the end of the day, the government has done a fairly decent job considering the U.S. economy has been the world's largest for almost a century. So to recap, the government accounts for around 40% of our economy, either directly or indirectly, when we take into consideration federal, state, and local government activities, and in total, around 1 in 5 jobs in the U.S. are government-related. The primary means through which the government influences the economy is through fiscal policy and monetary policy. While there are constant tools the government has in its quiver, the government changed the policies depending upon the economic conditions to improve economic growth. Finally, there are many other ways the government can try and boost economic growth or influence our economy, whether it be through tax deductions, protecting private property rights, or even our immigration policies. We hope you enjoy this episode of Relatable Finance and tune in next week. Thank you.
Provenance Wealth Advisors is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services, Inc. Securities are offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered through Provenance Wealth Advisors and Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. Any opinions are those of Relatable Finance Podcast and PWA and not necessarily those of Raymond James. The information contained in this report does not purport to be a complete description of the securities, markets, or developments referred to in this material. There is no assurance that any of the trends mentioned will continue or forecasts will occur. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but Raymond James does not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision. Does not constitute a recommendation. Investment involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected. Diversification and asset allocation do not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. Investing involves risk, and investors may incur a profit or loss. Raymond James does not provide tax or legal services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Future investment performance cannot be guaranteed, and investment yields will fluctuate with market conditions. Any examples given in the podcast are for illustration purposes only. Actual investor results will vary.